Welcome to the 2024 season of the Players' Voice podcast, brought to you by the Gaelic Players Association in collaboration with Real Talks. My name is Alan O'Mara. I'm the founder of Real Talks and a mental performance coach with elite sports teams. I've played for Cavan, managed New York, and I'm very proud to be the host of the Players' Voice podcast for the third consecutive year. If you are a returning listener, welcome back to the Players' Voice. We're excited to share more entertaining and empowering conversations with you. If it's your first time and you like what you hear, you can listen to previous episodes with the likes of Niall Morgan, Lauren McGee, Chloe Morey, or Neil McManus by searching The Player's Voice on whatever podcast platform you prefer. The GPA is the representative body for high-performance intercounty players. Founded by players back in 1999 and strengthened by a merger with the Women's Gaelic Players Association in 2020, the GPA supports over 4,000 current male and female intercounty players, as well as a growing number of former players, across four core pillars: player representation, player welfare, player development, and equality. You can learn more about their work at gaelicplayers.com. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this episode of The Player's Voice. Mickey Quinn, you're very welcome to The Player's Voice. How are you?
I'm good. Enjoying the summer off, so can't complain.
Yeah, no, thanks for taking the time to do this. I suppose for anyone jumping in or listening, like, you would have been a professional in the Australian Football League before. You're a teacher in St. Mel's. You're the founder of MQP, which is Mickey Quinn Performance. You're a father of two. You've served on the GPA's National Executive Committee. And you're also now a former Longford player based on a recent decision. So it doesn't sound like we're going to have much to talk about today, but you're welcome on and we'll try and make this episode work.
Here we go.
Let's jump straight into it, Mickey. Look, you're someone who, again, if anyone doesn't know, 13 years on the go at Longford. As I said already, you played 3 years in the AFL in Australia. I think I saw there was a nice article on the Longford Leader that you'd made 139 appearances for Longford. I know I'd seen stuff on the county board's account as well, Mickey. You know, I think it was stretched all the way back to 2002. So talk to me a little bit about the decision to step away and announcing that on July 18th.
Yeah, so it's probably something that I went for last year. I kind of had it in my head that that was one more year. I thought I had stepped back after last year, but kind of just wasn't ready to go. And then I suppose it was probably a difficult year with Longford, and then probably with family and everything away from things, that you start to really, with two kids and that, you start to really see the impact off the field that it can have, by racing out the door 3-4 evenings a week, missing different things and getting to that stage in life where it's like, I suppose the way I was looking at it, the risk and reward, or, you know, are you ready to go to the well for that? I suppose for me, the big thing this year was to try and get to Croke Park, to play in Croke Park, and have the kids there. And that was kind of something that I was like, oh, that was my pinnacle, or that was the goal of this year, whether it be a league, Division 4 league final, or whether you got to the Talchin Cup semi. That was kind of what my target was. And then when you fall short, you're like, after 13 years, you're kind of thinking, is it work? Keep coming back. And I suppose I probably even felt like I couldn't put in the effort that I'd like to put in, because you're juggling so many balls, family and school and other bits and pieces, and you're putting your life on hold, off the pitch maybe, for that one moment. And you start to realize, okay, you have to be realistic about it, and maybe if I keep going back and stepping away when there, I don't know, I feel like there probably is no right time. But last year I had reached out to a few different people. It's like, when will you know? Do you know, when do you know it's time to step back? And someone said to me, oh, you'll know. And I was like, no, I don't know. So it wasn't the right time last year, but I was away with family, holiday in Italy, and, you know, I was like, yeah, these are kind of things that I would have sacrificed in the past, or maybe you know, can't do this or can't do that and can't plan that far ahead. So if you don't plan ahead, it doesn't happen, because you're looking at schedules and changing, and if we make that, I can't do this. So I think it fell at the time for me that after getting a bit of time with family and having a chat with Kate, and it was something that was always in the back of my mind, so it wasn't really a surprise to me, or even any of us are close to me. It was always something there that I talked about, because I felt like things were lining up away from the pitch that I can start moving things in another direction rather than keep putting them on hold.
Yeah, like just as I'm listening to you there, Mickey, like a couple of things jump out. Like obviously this is clearly not like a snap decision. Like, you know, this has been on your mind going back even sounds like to last year, or I think it sounds like you were aware that this was going to end. It was probably going to end on the sooner side, and you're making decisions for yourself in terms of life off the field, but also family comes part of it. But one thing I'm thinking of was there any part of you that, and I know we can talk about strategically and practically and logistically and logically, but was there any part of you that was a little afraid to pull the curtain down, to make the decision that you are, having done it for so long? Like, it's been such a huge part of your life, like, you know, in terms of knowing you as long as I do, and I think we did our first interview in 2016 on the Real Talks podcast, like the intercounty lifestyle, but also just the elite sports kind of lifestyle was always just like kind of, that's, I used the word lifestyle on purpose, like I felt like you were very comfortable with that and wanted that. Mm-hmm. And like, so is there any part of you that was kind of afraid to let that go as you kind of navigated this decision in the last few months?
Yes, in the sense that, like, I've probably been carrying a knee injury since I haven't played any Talchin Cup, really. Played the first game, and that's been dagging along and kind of trying to find structure when I'm in rehab or can't do can't run, haven't ran since. And that's kind of, in one sense, given me more time to think or maybe put that time elsewhere. But it's also, geez, I need that structure. I need that. Like, I am hugely exercise dependent. My mood depends on it massively. If I don't get it done early in the day, or if it's left too late and you're tired, it's like, oh, no. So I think that's something that I've realized, and I suppose that lifestyle that you're talking about. But I think it's just, it's fallen at that stage now. Like, even, I suppose, Dáil Éireann, where, like, I saw Paul Conroy and his kid on the pitch after, and I was like, phenomenal to see the year that he's after having. And like, it's on the losing team, but you're looking, it's like a tear in my eye looking at him and his daughter and Pádraig Joyce and his kids, like, to get to that stage, and you're looking, he's a player, Pádraig Joyce is a manager, it's like, mm-hmm. Could I drift into that? Like, and you're thinking, there's so much that goes on away from the pitch to get to that high level of performance. It just kind of open your eyes a little bit to it, and then you're kind of thinking, could you go to the well again? I'm sure I made the right decision, but I think in hindsight, or looking back at my career, I kind of take for granted when I say, oh, 13 years. I don't feel like I've been playing 13 years. But then you kind of forget the 3 years in Australia too, that if you didn't play them, that's 16 years. So it's if you were to look at it that way, I think I've always looked at that. It was like, oh, I've only been playing 8 years, 9 years. Other lads have played 14, 15. But I suppose throwing 3 years on top of the 13, 16-year at that level, it's a fair time. And especially for the body, to be touch wood, half decent at the end of it.
Like, I think, like, again, listening to you, like, you mentioned earlier, like, the impact on family, which I definitely want to touch upon. And also, like, going back to seeing the likes of, you know, when you see players on the pitch after an All-Ireland final, or you know, it doesn't have to be an All-Ireland final, but, like, having your kid on the field with you in Croke Park, like, I feel like that's something that you wanted, like, you would have liked to have had that experience. Like, as you obviously do get old, you're 34 now, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, like, you go back to yourself in Australia or playing along from your 20s, whether you're in college or starting to work or whatever, like, it's, some of it by nature is selfish, you know what I mean? You're doing it for yourself and you're pushing yourself to the limit. And, like, I'm sure
as you weighed up this decision and going back to you mentioning the impact of family? Because I think it's a big part of particularly like an intercounty player's lifespan. I'm not just talking about you specifically here, but as you get older, like it is a commitment, like it is hard to juggle. Like there is sacrifices, there's time demands, there's time impact, there's energy impacts. And is a dad of two, like was that coming to the fore for you in terms of wanting to be able to be more present or to have more time for that strand? Is that something that was part of the process for you?
I think so. Like, so when I was in Australia, probably the last 2 years, probably would have struggled a little bit with grandparents passing away and being that far away from home, that having that network of a family around me and close by, that has always been my number one reason for playing, because I see the joy and the experience it brings, not just to you, that the people that are close to you, that coming home after a game and that buzz after a win, even when after a loss, that it's still the same people that are in that circle that are for you through thick and thin. And then you're kind of realizing that the good days they're few and far between. But to keep going and the impact that it has away from the field, it kind of opened your eyes a little bit. That I probably, we mentioned about it there, about being selfish. I'd see myself that maybe to be at that elite level levels above, I think you have to be really selfish to be an elite sports person. Like there's a trait there, and I probably think to myself, maybe I'm not as selfish in certain ways that I dismiss everyone else, and I'm looking at certain guys that might have headed out to Australia, and you have to have a different mindset. Whether it's, maybe selfish is the wrong word to use, but you have to be very much soul focused or driven, that maybe you're not afraid to upset or hurt people, or just hone in on a certain area, and whatever comes with that, you just go with it. That I mightn't have had that same kind of mindset to succeed out there. And I think maybe that's where kind of, in one sense, it's a good, bad trait or a good trait, whatever way you want to look at it. But I suppose it taps into maybe the coach and the teacher in me, that I want to help others, and maybe in some sense I'd like to think maybe the leader side of things, because you care about others so much too.
For sports people in particular, and this is across the board, through Olympics, through Premier League, through intercounty player, like kind of closing that part of your playing career, because it's a huge part of your identity, like, and I'm sure it's a huge part of yours, Mickey. And I think it's, as players reach this transition phase out of the playing at the top level, like it's a challenging time for lots of players. And like, I know from talking to you before that like you do have multiple of the pillars in place to like help with that transition out. And then we can come to like we'll come to Mickey Quinn performance later in terms of that body of work and what you're doing. But I suppose like if I was sticking with it in terms of like the years with Longford, and like, you know, say we talked about the All-Ireland final there, or you talk about like those big moments, like I'm curious, like your obviously career with Longford wasn't one that was glittered with All-Ireland final appearances. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't one that you were getting those big days. And maybe I'll start with, like you said, the idea or like the picturing yourself back in Croke Park for a game with Longford was something that almost like helped lure you back in for another year, like seeing a league final as a chance there, or Tarleton Cup. Can you talk to me a little bit about kind of about that decision? Sorry, not that decision, but that idea. I think, and I come at it from the perspective of, say, the Tarleton Cup, for example, there's 17 teams involved in it. And you'll hear people online, or you know, it could be on Twitter or whatever, being like, oh, why is that game in that stadium? Like, there's only 10,000 people at it. Why not play it somewhere else? Could you talk to me a little bit about the kind of the importance of that, or why that is such a big thing in your mind for as an individual, maybe as a Longford player, for the county of Longford, what the relationship between that is? Because I think some people don't understand that.
Yeah, so it probably comes in a few different folds or facets. So from the Longford side of things, I was like, why are you playing football? Why do you want to play with Longford? Do you know, you're shit, that's what you get, like, or you're a division 3 or 4, like, and you're trying to justify. It's like your why for playing with Longford is very different to your why for playing for Dublin, and trying to figure out and know what your why is. And I think that's when it comes to for me anyway, your Division 3 and 4s that I've seen, that trying to develop a culture or understanding there that, look, but you're not going to win All-Irelands. If it means that success means for you at that time and that team and that group means getting whatever number of wins, or it mightn't even be based on wins, but trying to put something in place that there is a measure there that's realistic, that it's not like the times we went out to play Dublin, and that's leading on to the second thing. We've played Dublin in games. It's like, you know, if we do this and if we, like, no, hang on a minute. Like, right, let's have proper targets. If our own kickouts, can we get this number? Can we win this number? Or can we get X number of scores? Whatever they score, fine. But can we, we'll limit that as best we can, but have proper targets. Like, there's no point in trying to hit Dublin. Like, we're a Division 4 team. The last time, a few times we played in the championship, 23 points, 19 points, 27 points. Like, you have to be realistic about that. And that was the probably thing that I would have said about playing Dublin and Croke Park. We think I've had been on the end of two, if not three, defeats against them in Croke Park. And it was a 23 and a 27 point defeat. And that results in probably a 3-year regression in the county as a result, which I don't think maybe we're, as a performance coach or someone overlooking Lanford GAA would see that, hang on a minute, look at that squad, how many of an age profile have dropped off that played that game that haven't came back the following year or the year after, that just disappeared because it was like, I'm not doing that, that's a waste of time for me. Whereas for me, getting to play in Croke Park in a league final or a Talchin Cup, they're realistic targets that you get to Croke Park and you can win a game. You're not going up with your head up your arse thinking, oh, we could win, we're on the bus. Arriving in, turning in the round gate and arriving half an hour before playing Dublin because you went down the wrong way and the bus got stuck and you're like, this is crazy stuff.
Like the... Like, I suppose as I'm listening to you there, like, I'm thinking of, say, Armagh just won the All-Ireland Championship, and they have been a team that bounced down into Division 3. Derry have been down in Division 4. There's other teams like Clare and Sligo come to mind that do have certainly, you know, you're bouncing around Division 3 or 4 at different stages and you climb up. Like, when you look back over the period of time that you've had, like, and you say you gave a good example there of a chastening experience against a Dublin team that really scars. And I think you said a 3-year aggression. Like, now that you're kind of trying to step out of it and whatever way you go back into it down the line, it is up to yourself. But like, what do you think is like holding a county like Longford back? Like, what's like, and not just talking about Longford specifically, but like, obviously that is your county, so it's the one we can talk about. Like, where there becomes like that detachment of hope and that detachment of, I'm trying to think what the right word is, but you know what I'm saying, where it kind of, the place kind of just comes off, the wheels come off the wagon a little bit.
I know exactly what you mean, because I know exactly what you're saying, because I think it's coming from the top down, that it's not just, oh, it's players, it's management, it's county board, it's top down. And I think there's a, I heard it back from someone who's like, geez, we can't just take negative feedback. And that's, see different situations that have popped up this year in particular and other years, when it's like, oh, Jesus, oh no, F that, I'm out of here. And we can't actually take criticism and go forward. I think it's a top-down thing that there's a
community. When you say top-down, Mickey, what do you mean? Like, top-down from where?
Oh, county board, management, players. Mm. And you kind of think, I'll build up from a young age to get to a stage. But like, if structures and things are in place, and I feel that there needs to be a culture of and a community built in smaller counties on a whole different level and different way to other counties, that Lanfield needs to create almost like a club mentality around the county to try and get that. And until that comes into play, like, I'm looking at age profile of people that goes at Lanford games. You're talking 200-300 people max, and then you're looking at some of these people and it's 50 plus, maybe a handful of kids. And you go and look in other counties and it's like, it swarmed. I remember playing Down last year in the Talchin Cup, and it was swarmed at halftime with kids out playing football on the pitch. And you're looking at different things. It's like, no one's allowed on the pitch. Can't do that. Not allowed. It was like, you need to entice young people to go to games. Obviously, number one way is if you're winning and you get winning. But there needs to be a bit of a balance. Like, how does that happen? Well, you need to create something, whether it be culture, whether it be care, whether this community needs to be created. And if it takes someone from an outside coming in that's an expert in this field that might give you different ideas and look at things very differently, well, that's what's needed. Rather than, I suppose, what's the definition of madness is doing the same thing and expecting different results. And that's what probably has happened. And I get frustrated with my career in some senses that I look at certain years and say, oh, there's two years down the drain. You say 13 years, I was like, there's another year. And you're like, realistically, there might have been 3 or 4 years where you kind of were like, yeah, there. Mm-hmm. And then you're looking at 2012 was 12 and 13 best years. You're playing Division 3, you won Division 3, up in Division 2, back to 3, and then back down to 4, and it's back up to 3 and sitting there. Whereas I think probably number-wise with a Longford team that you could be, to have that sustainability and push on is very hard without having numbers coming through. And it just needs to be looked at things very differently. I'd have very different opinions and views than probably what everything else is. But I don't think you can follow what other counties are doing, because we're in a very different, unique position to what others are doing. And they're doing this, we'll follow them 2 or 3 years after them. And then when we're catching up with them in 3 years' time, they're doing something else for the last 3 years. So we'll copy them. So I just think there's a lot to be said for approaching things differently and having a different approach. And probably long-term is where it's at. And there's probably a rebuild stage coming. But it needs to be looked at holistically rather than just what's there at the moment or in the next year or two.
Yeah, like there's a lot in what you said there, Mickey, because I think we could sit down here today, right, and I could say to you, you played for 13 years for Longford, aren't you great, and butter you up and tell, we could pretend everything's like fantastic and you had the best time of your life, and I'm sure you have so many good memories and friendships and relationships and experiences, I will obviously ask you about those, but like I think it's fair to say too, like when you reflect back on the body of work while wearing the blue and yellow of Longford, like stepping away, like it sounds like there has to be like some like regret and mixed feelings there about what you are able to achieve, maybe not necessarily individually, but like collectively as a county, like there's frustrations there in terms of like maybe what the output was of the group consistently over a period of time. Like, is there?
And I suppose like it gets to a stage where like you'd like to think that you're probably a standard bearer and that you kind of might be driving things a certain way. It becomes probably that wears itself too, that if someone else is doing that and you're trying to play up to that. But you know, like if you're 13 years in and you're still top, heading up in the GPS high speed or whatever, and you'd be looking at certain things like that and you're like, hang on a minute. that's what would go through my head at a different stage, and you fall into that side of things that no, I just need to worry about my own thing. But I suppose probably my way of thinking would be like maybe that selfish side of things. I'm not just looking at me. I was like, you, the coach starts creeping into the head there looking at everything else. But there's lots of things floating around there at the moment in the head, with different years and different things. But like one of the things that probably was lovely the last couple of weeks was like you're getting little bits of messages or calls from different people, and it's brilliant to get the different people away from the setup and that have been close and watching. But the ones that really hit home are, like I'd always say, just be a good teammate. And it's the the players that you've played with that drop you a message, and you're like, geez, like we never say these things when we probably should, but when it's at the end, but it's still nice to get that bit of maybe feedback or something from someone that you didn't realize that you might have said or done something that, or do you remember the time you done this? And I was like, no, but someone else does. And so that's the teacher or the coach side of things, that it's, I suppose it's not the instant gratification, it's the opposite, that in a few years' time, someone, you might do something for someone that you made them feel a certain way, but they remember it. And that's something that I think would be something that I'd like to feel that I done for a few. To be a few, maybe not so much, but I think that's the nature of the beast too.
No, it definitely is. Like, it's, you can't keep, when you're trying to push and challenge and empower and support, like, you can't keep everybody happy. Like, you know, you have to sometimes step on toes, or you have to ruffle a few feathers. But yeah, I think, like, just like big picture then, like, because, like, it's easy to get lost down a rabbit hole of, you know, why you didn't get to win Leinster Championships ever. But I kind of, like, and the only reason I bring that up is because there's actually a multiple counties that get caught in that cycle of every 2-3 years, oh, we're going to start again. Every 2-3 years, we're going to start again. And there's 10, 15 players gone, and there's a new 10 or 15 in. And what's really impressive, and I mean this like as a very sincere compliment, Mickey, is that you're one of those that no matter what was happening, whether things were going well or not, like, you showed up. And, like, I think, you know, I think the type of word is gets bandied around in sport is warrior. But I think there's a lot of fans in Longford and further afield that would regard you as that, in terms of how you played and how consistently you played and compete for Longford. Because lots of us go in and dip our toe and get out of there because after 2 or 3 years, hey, it's not happening. It's not how I'd like it. In the All-Ireland final, it jumped out, you know, just because it's the obvious example, but talk like lads like Rory Grugan or Aidan Forker that had, like, you know, had been in those Division 3 years where lots of lads would have came and went. And like every county needs those guys. And okay, those guys have got their, they got their lift in the cup moment. And I know you haven't, but talk to me about, you know, going back to why, I think we started with that as the conversation of why you play and why you want. Can we loop back a little bit to that of, you know, why you did that? And I'd love to actually hear you talk a little bit about what you're going to miss the most about doing it.
It's, first of all, I suppose the side of things, when you look at Aidan Faulkner and like the career that he's had, and even I'd probably say myself in a sense too, that it's the being versatile too. I think that's the way the game has gone, that you have to be versatile and willing to adapt to maybe the way the game goes and also the position that you're playing. Like, I think Aidan Faulkner plays full forward for his club, but he's wing back, full back. He does what's needed, and I suppose that's what you're alluding to about being a warrior, like what's needed for the team, he'll do it. I suppose my why, like, you do, you want to test yourself and you want to get better. But like, even it's something, I probably haven't had too many injuries, and the last while been dipping in and out of training, you know, there's no point in going down now. Training started, I'll do bedtime first, and then you're heading down to training after putting the kids down, and you're arriving maybe half hour late, and then you're just watching, and then you're like, you're ducking away because you're not going into the dressing room afterwards. And then it was like, we're only headed out a couple of weeks ago, and okay, so why are you going down? Train's not until 8. Why are you heading off here now at 7:15? Do you have to? I was like, I don't get to chat anyone if I don't get talking to them before training or after. It's like, that's something that I realize. It's like that half hour or that maybe 15 minutes of a window of crack or banter or chat before or after. It's overlooked, and it's dealing with 20 lads, 30 lads that you're doing that twice, three times a week. Whereas that's gone. That's something that I've realized way before this year, that was always my thing. It's like, how am I going to meet or spend time with people? That's a massive, because I know for me, I feed off talking to different people throughout the day, like whether it be picking up the phone, calling someone, or meeting someone for a coffee, or like if I went through from one end of the day to the other without talking to a few different people, I think I'd crack up. So I think it's that human connection that I think I crave.
No, it is like there's that, I totally relate to that in terms of, you know, like those 30 minutes, an hour, like even, you know, say from when I would put my manager's hat on from my experience in New York, like that hour before the session was almost where I was more important to me because that's where I got to talk to people and catch up at a different level. But like player wise, the crack, the laugh, and like that's when you get to have that, like just those kind of more subtle moments, you know, and they're not the big moments. But as you said, like to me, like connection's not built because of one big presentation or because you won a trophy. Like connection's built through time, like and through conversation and laughter and like I'm sure at times frustration and like giving out to each other. Yeah.
And I think that links in with probably where I've probably been heading with the MQP side of things, that like even what you said, the frustration, like if you took it out on a lad or, you know, why didn't you pass me that ball the last time? Look, I shouldn't have shouted at you. You were right. And you can have that conversation. But for me, I just feel that the individual or the smaller group side of things, that's probably where I see myself or I see the game of Gaelic football heading if some of the top teams are probably already doing it. But the one-to-one coaching and smaller coaching that 15 or 20 minutes before training, that you're getting in a block of work with a forwards coach, or okay, do you know what? You dropped the ball three times there, or your hand passes weren't crisp, okay, off your left side, you've fired over two or three that weren't great, so let's work on that today. And having individual needs at the skill side of things is something that I find when it comes to inter-county that there's almost like is there an ownership or responsibility put back in the player that you should already have that basic skill, but unless you're going out practicing that on your days off, it's very hard sometimes because it's a tactic session, or you might not get to do shooting and training because we're working on pressing on kickouts or opposition kickouts or your own kickouts, that there's chunks of the game that are left amiss, and I think the individual side of coaching and smaller groups, whether it be paired alongside a training session or at the end, I think there's scope for that, and even away from a team session, and that's something that I kind of am passionate about, and I'd like to drift into that side of things too.
Yeah, so even like just changing lanes then a little bit, like talk to me about like, so earlier this year you launched like Mickey Quinn Performance MQP. People can look it up through your Instagram or get it online. And I know you've alluded to some of it there, but I suppose talk to me a little bit about why you set that up, kind of what work you have been doing in that space. And because it sounds like from listening to you and getting the snapshot, like this is going to be one of the things that somewhat replaces the playing pillar of your life and that time and space. So good job having a plan and development and getting it done, because I said to you earlier, and all joking aside, like so many players fall into difficulty in all sports when the playing part of it stops, because, and we've even just mentioned the, you know, the example you gave is such a simple one of the talking before training and having that half an hour, 45 minutes. Like when you come away from sports completely, that's removed. But at the type of role you're talking about, and I've done it in different capacities, like you still get to plug into that. You don't like and get to put your boots on and be in the middle of a session, but you still get to be part of the bigger thing. And I kind of definitely curious as to, I suppose, coming back to the question of why you set that up. And I think some people will hear performance coach or what's that, or individual training, and it sounds a little bit up in the air because it's not the norm. So talk to us a little bit about what you do then in that space as well.
Yeah, so it's probably through the GPA I've met with so many great people that have kind of just, I suppose, talking and get that creativity there that's sitting. I suppose I think sometimes you can get stale, whether it be in your work or in your sport and cruise. And I think there's stages that I think we've all gone through that. But from having Aaron Graffin, I've had loads of different, Ian Reeves, Fran, there through the GPA, and I've worked with so many different people that give you that bite, and I love what they do on that side of things, off the pitch. And that was something in Australia, was like, if you have off the pitch right, with family, career, whatever it is, away from the pitch, on the pitch you'll come right. And I suppose it's probably gone full circle now, that I'm looking at the off the pitch and on the pitch is all merging together a little bit with this. But it's an area that I think is probably skipped over a little bit, especially from underage the whole way through. Like, I think, and it will probably come back around, but I think there's been so much of a focus on S&C and gym. And I know, like, there's a rival club of ours, and you drive past and the kids are out playing loads on the pitch. It's probably town club, and they get to the pitch and there's footballs out, and great job. Go past my own, and there's times there it's like there's no one out on the pitch. There could be a car or a bike at the gym, people are in the gym, and there's a huge emphasis on that. And whether it be the facilities or something to get more people out playing or practicing shooting, and then the next day it's just like, make it worth your while. If you're going down, seeing a guy a few years ago, one football on his own, I'm going for a kick, and he run out to the 45, one ball, kick it up in there, catch it, run in, kick it off the bar. Might do that five times and 15 minutes gone. Chat to someone along the way, and you're like, get value for your money. Like, that time management, like, how do you go about, if you're going on your own, what way would you structure it to get? Are you doing a speed session? Are you kicking? Do you go in twos and bring more footballs and take turns? Like, get your numbers up. But I'm a firm believer in the craft side of things, and that's probably the big focus for myself and a kind of program that I'm rolling out and to individuals, teams, and even workshops to clubs, that honing your craft is probably what I'd call it. That's what is your craft first, and then how can you go about honing it, and then expressing it and showing it. And I think they're the kind of the three pillars of it, that if you're able to hone your craft and know what it is first, that it's that one hand catch when someone's hanging out of you. It's the clean skills that you don't have to chest grab it. You catch it out here and get rid of it quickly. There's a runner, you can flick it down. Like, there's things like that aren't really taught, because it's not the norm. It's not a kick. It's not a catch. It's not pretty. Well, some of it, maybe the flick is, but you're trying to find things. There's way more skills in our game that we don't observe or notice enough. Maybe the way things have gone, that the risk side of things is taken out, that if you can show your craft or do something with your skill set, it will break a team down. And whether that's left foot, left hand, whether it be a certain turn or twist that can give you that space and time, they're all the different areas that I think are overlooked, that when you go into a structure or a system, if you don't have that craft, you're not going to break down a really good setup that have numbers behind the ball, because maybe you haven't thought about the game in that way, or you mightn't have the skill set to execute something that might break down what's in front of you. So I suppose that's a long-winded answer to what direction MQP is hoping to head.
And am I right in saying, like, and then, like, tell me if I'm wrong, but, like, there's part of you that wants to, like, help other players, like, reconnect with the skills of the game and the expression of self through the game. And, like, I think of even just the examples you there of, you know, lads being out individually or in small twos or threes, where maybe that culture wise, and I could be wrong, lots of people could be doing this, but I don't, most environments I've been in, they haven't, is like using the game as, like, in a more relaxed manner, almost to, like, practice, and you said craft, and to connect. I think lads are in the gym a lot of the time. That's not to bash it. Like, it's really important. Like, it's a part, but it's one pillar of the, you know, of the game. But, like, it sounds like you want to try and almost help lads reconnect with the game, maybe on a more individual level or on a more, skillful level, rather than the kind of, the structured side of the game? Because you could easily say, oh yeah, I'm a performance coach and I specialize in defensive structures or attacking structures and patterns. But am I right in saying that you're there, you really want to try and help individuals unlock different parts and different strengths or maximize strengths as well to their game, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think my dream is seeing the gym paired up with an indoor astro that you can incorporate the two. It's like, right, we're going to do 25 minutes in the gym, then we're over to individual needs in the AstroTurf area. We're going in twos, we're doing this, we're focused on this today. And then you're kind of honing all together in a, whether it be an academy setup, in a senior setup, that you go back pre-season with County, and it's like, right, we're gym and running for 6-8 weeks, no football, but why don't you throw in 15 minutes of craft work or skill work? Doesn't have to be 40 meter kicks, but you're getting in touches, there's volume there. It mightn't be in a competitive setup, but there's that muscle memory there that you're doing it. That I think, yeah, as you said, there's areas for scope from such a young age the whole way up. And I think the play element has gone out of things. And then you mentioned that the smaller thing is the game is all, I see it in some of the soccer books you're looking at, a 3v3, everything comes back to that. 1v1, 2v1, 3v2, 2v3. What are the decisions and what are the skills that are incorporated into that? Because after that, it's just, if you can do everything right in those setups, it's never really any more than that round the ball at any one stage. So, and then there's tactics to maybe make those things happen. But if you've got this craft and the skill set to implement certain things in that, and then you're into your small-sided game. But I think the small-sided games, if you haven't got a certain standard, you're covering cracks. And I think that's, I find, maybe I'm wrong and someone with more knowledge will tell me that I am, but I think if you haven't got those skill sets, you have to build them to a certain base to put them into place in those games, that you might necessarily try certain things. And if 3v3, you'll try and cut back onto your strong foot or strong hand, or you're not going to try something if you haven't maybe tried in a different setup. And I think that's my aim, would be to go down that route to try and implement certain things like that, oh, Jesus. And then you hone in and say, that's exactly what we're doing the other night at training or for the last 6 weeks. I was talking to a guy recently. He was saying his kids, after having 3 weeks of a basketball camp, and he went out and played an age group above himself, and they couldn't get over. It's like the ball was sticking. It was crisp hands. It was like, what's he after doing? It was like, he father knew he was at a basketball camp for the last 3 weeks. Like, how many touches of a basketball did he have in 3 weeks?
The technical work.
Yeah.
Mm. Do you think that's something that, and even I can even ask you about it, just taking it from the lens of your career, because that's we can talk hypothetical about it, because it's making me even think about certain work that I would have done both as a player and a manager. Do you think in the GA world there's a commitment to the physical, as you said, just gym and running? We'll meet on a Monday and we're in the gym for 45 minutes and it's a half an hour running. But you think there's not enough work being done on the technical side in terms of having a certainly more structure around the development of those skills? Because I think it's got to a point where some lads even forget about the joy they get from some of the skills, because you're only really maybe able to do them for 20 minutes of a training session if it's opened out to a game at the end. And even at that, it might be, well, we're playing a game, but really we're working on pressing the kick out. So the coach might blow it up at random times to reset to go back to a kick out. You know what I mean? We've all done it.
Yeah.
Unless, do you think I can talk about, okay, physical, mental, technical, tactical. Say the GA world, I think tactical. Okay, I think it's. Okay,
yeah,
I can throw the question to you, but you break the. Because I could talk about it. I'm not going to fill up the talking time you're on. Talk to you about the breakdown of those four things, the spread of those four things across an average training or an average season.
For me, I'd nearly go the triangle, the pyramid approach, that it's the physical at the bottom. So this is the way it is at the moment. Physical at the bottom, then tactical, and then technical, just stuck in at the top. There's 5 minutes that then do a bit of shooting, and there's very little, not structure, but purposeful technical. And then the mental thing is just, you know, floating around there. Depends on what structure. And whereas physical, yes, but the technical, I think, needs to be there. And then the tactical. Whereas at inter-county level, I suppose there's a huge emphasis on the tactical, but Jesus, we're technically, I'd say that if you can't defend 1v1, why are we getting an extra man back? We're only covering cracks. So like, there's certain things, usually the tactics or the structures that are put in place, they're covering over something that will let you down at the end, or at some stage someone misses a tackle, then that throws everything out of the water then. So yeah, that'd be the way I'd look at it.
No, it's an interesting one. I think, yeah, like there's just that, like even I'm thinking of like the most obvious one that comes to my mind, as and you mentioned them earlier, was like that Dublin team that really dominated. To me, like, they technically were like outstanding. Like, first touch, one-on-one battles, both up front and at the back, like the coaching that they did. And I think sometimes when you're in the chasing pack, you can get caught in the trap of like looking for a coach with a magic tactical solution, or we're going to try and get physically fitter than them. But I think what you're coming back to is actually that technical work is a piece of work that can be accelerated, and never mind the marginal gains philosophy. I've had this with teams, and this can be in the mental side of it as well, because that's more my lane of work. Like, never mind marginal gains, like there's massive gains to be made if you dedicate some time. And yes, there's prioritization. It might mean, hey, we're actually not going to do that tonight. We're going to do this instead. And it takes a little bit of courage to do that, because that now means you're doing it differently to what's been done before. And that's scary. Like, that's change. And even some players in the group were like, wait, what? Why are we doing this? That's not what we normally do.
Yeah.
And that's hard. But it sounds like you want to try and be a little bit of a change maker. It sounds like you're not afraid to do things differently. And I suppose, tell me if I'm wrong right now, in terms of the line of work you're doing, like, you need coaches who are willing to think differently, or clubs or county teams to be different, because you need them to hire you to do this work, to make it a business and to be successful. So if any coaches listen, any players listen, like, what is it that they say, hey, Mickey, we want to have you in, we're just definitely, we're lacking something here. Like, what is it that you, the service that you do, and kind of what would be your pitch or your ask of them in terms of going in to do that body work?
Yeah, like, you kind of, again, meeting with management or coaches and seeing what exactly they're looking for, what's on an individual basis, our forwards aren't working together, and you know, find out what is the problem, or find out what they're trying to implement first, and that's where it becomes just like, what do you do? It's like, you tell me a bit more, you need to get a bit more information before I said I'll come in and fix things. I'm magic. It doesn't work that way. It's like, what's happening, what's the problems that you're seeing, and you're probably looking at things or trying to maybe give that helicopter view or come in from a different view and look at things that, okay, so our guys running at the ball and clogging up space. Are you making space for each other in the forwards? From a defensive side of things, is it that lunging in too much? Your man is coming on a loop every time. You're great up behind him, but maybe take that step in front. Like, it's trying to think differently. But I suppose the pitch, yeah, you're trying to talk with someone and figure out what you're a coach and what exactly are the issues they're seeing, and are they the same issues that, or maybe there mightn't be issues, that maybe the problem is further back, that our forwards, they can't get on the ball. It's like, maybe it's not getting up to them quick enough. Maybe they don't know what runs they're making, rather than, oh, he's sitting in there, he's lazy. It was like,
and then the poor corner forward gets taken off.
How many corner forwards were left for Galway at the end of the game? Do you know, like, Shane Walsh, Damien Comer, and Finnerty, the poor injury, the guys, it was like, they're coming away thinking, what could we do differently next time? Maybe a different approach. And that's probably looking at things through a different lens. But I've always said, even from a club base anyway, that there's three pillars to go after to try and be better than any other team in the county. Are you the fittest team? Are you technically the best team? And are you the best decision makers? If you're technically really good, that'll go a long way. Okay, that you mightn't be giving the ball away as much, so you mightn't have to be as fit. So that fitness thing can maybe drop back a little bit if you're really technical and good decision making. Okay, or you're really fit but technically really weak, so you keep giving the ball away, but you're up and down and up and down. Which there's a tendency to focus on that. The physical side of things is emphasized massively. Technically not great, and then decision making. You know, you talk about the Dublin being technically great. There are probably some of those players that were very average, but and they tell you that their skill set they're there, but they knew their base and they knew what they did and could do. They weren't trying 40-meter outside the boot passes, 20-meter pump kick, fizz pass. That was it, and they knew that, and that was the decision element coming in. So I think it's almost like these three little columns that you're trying to fill up each of them. That if you focus too much on one and let the other drop, that's when I think the spinning plates will fall.
Yeah, and I will say, like, kind of as I wrap this up, Mickey, like, having done it from a manager's perspective, like, it's hard to try juggle these things. It's hard to try and find that balance. But what I love about what you're saying is that you're someone who is able to come in and to be like that kind of consultant figure, to be that kind of additional voice or extra set of eyes at different times to try and problem solve, to try and find ways to innovate on what you're already doing. Like, it's not like, it doesn't sound like you're like, I'm coming in and here's the Mickey Quinn 3-point plan to how to do, like, to play the game and get football, but just trying to use, I suppose, what it sounds like your playing experience, your teaching experience, to try and help teams find, like, to innovate and to find solutions to what they want to do, and to give space and time for skill development on the technical side of things. And I think, in terms of the GAA in particular, like, S&C has been dominant for years. Right now, mental performance coaching is very, you know, popular and topical. And most teams, when a management ticket is announced, will kind of have one on it or have a person kind of linked to the setup. But I think where you're coming at it from is, and I hope you're ahead of the curve here and that this is going to be another layer. And I think some teams may already be doing this, by the way. I could be wrong. But in terms of it becoming the norm, I know certainly they do it in, like, in basketball here in the States, there's a player development coach. In hockey, there's a player development coach that's actually going in to try and do that one-to-one work. And okay, skill development, what are you doing? How are we going to get better at that? And I love that you have the foresight of that, the awareness of that, and that you want to try and provide a solution and give back. Because I think the more people involved in the GAA that want to stay in it and find ways to innovate and to do things slightly different or change, the better. And for me, listening to you, like, I think anything we can do to find ways to get more boys, girls, men, women out on the field, playing, practicing, kicking, shooting, blocking, rather than necessarily always being indoors or in the gym or that kind of vibe. I love that. And I would hope that that's something anyone listening says, how can we get more of that in our club? Or how can we give our players or members a little bit of structure that helps them be outside more to practice the game that they all love or that we all love?
I think for me as well, like, I'd like to see myself that you can kind of drift into other sports too, that the rugby side of things, even see Declan Darcy there and Brian Cullen, the way they've drifted to the Leinster, and you're learning, and as you say, you're taking ideas from other sports and maybe learning and interning from other sports, and maybe can bring it back or cross-code it a little bit, that there's so much to be got. And even the way the game has gone, there's, you're looking a little bit of a rugby background, basketball background too, that's there at the moment now. And is Olympic handball the next way of looking at things? That's the way it's set up. Is that the sport that we need people to look at now?
Yeah, no, you can look at any sport. I've done it up in Gaelic Park in New York. Lacrosse would be on before we play. And be like, what's that? How does that work? Why is he doing that? Why is she doing this? Like, there's innovation in all sports. And sometimes we can end up just, you know, we kind of copying and pasting what we see. And there's a lot of, that's in most sports. But definitely, if anyone listening, like, to check out your Instagram. Or is there anywhere specific to go to find that, or is it Instagram?
No, just Instagram, and then probably
To get in touch with you.
To reach out through email or that. That's kind of, and have that initial 20 minutes Teams call or call over the phone and build from there and try and talk through a few bits and pieces and put together a bit of a plan. So I had a few different clubs that have came looking for workshops that I'm in the middle of putting together. So yeah, it's exciting and I suppose filling the void so far.
No, good luck with it, Mickey. I think it's great. And I definitely, anyone listening, just reach out, have that first conversation if it's of interest to you, find a way to work together. They'll definitely benefit the club or the team. And I wish you the very best of luck with that. And kind of my last question for you, and because I'm after softening you up there for an hour or so, when you look back on the time you had playing for Longford, what are you most proud of?
Most proud of. It's probably the relationships that I've built. And there's times there where lads of the club laugh at me. There was a meeting where I turned around and said that I'm not here to be your friend, I want to win. But I've come full circle that when you go through things with people on the pitch, that I think you automatically do, that you've been through something, whether it be success or failure. And I think that's what comes with that. You've relationships built that, even Damien Sheridan, met him a couple of weeks ago and hadn't seen him in a year. You pick up where you left off. And I think that's something, I don't think anyone that's not involved in team sport, I don't think you can do that, or I don't think you have that. I think when you go to the well with someone or go through tough trainings or games or good times or bad times, that you've built something in a relationship, that there's a connection there that'll always be there. And that's something that whether you bump into someone for a coffee or in a pub or walking down the street, that that's nice. And that's, I suppose, something that I am proud of, that you have lots of them. And when you're around for 13 years, you definitely do. And maybe you forget a lot of them until you cross paths with them again.
Now, that's the perfect note to end in. And I think as you go through these next few weeks, these next few months, you'll keep crossing paths with people like that. So enjoy those relationships. And in terms of the work that you're going to do, enjoy building many more. I'm sure you will. So, Mickey Quinn, thanks for joining us on The Player's Voice. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a million.